Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End. A Merry Christmas. It is our Christmas special. This wasn't going to be a special, but it's sort of growing a little bit, this podcast. As you would have seen from the title, it's all about one special man, one Heidar Helgason. My name is John. With me is Michael. Merry Christmas, Michael.
He gets the ball, he scores a goal, he gets the ball, he scores a goal, he scores a goal, go, go, Heidar, 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 Heidar Helgason. Merry Christmas. I don't know what to say, Merry Christmas in Icelandic, so I nearly said Merry Happy Returns there. That definitely doesn't work.
I thought you were going to, that was your version of A Christmas Carol, but no, it's just a Heidar Helgason chant, of course. And Merry Christmas to you, Jason.
Merry Christmas, John and everyone. I'm not going to sing, but it feels quite appropriate that we're doing a Christmas episode for the man from Iceland.
Yes, we are. Now, here's the thing, and I'm going to give this to Jason first. He wasn't the first Icelandic player to play for Watford. Do you know who was, Jason?
Was it Johan Gudmundsson?
It was Johan Gudmundsson. I had a feeling that you'd get that instantly, Jason, because it's all too much information stored in your brain. yes, he was, but nowhere near the impact of what Heidar made. And we actually started, and you'll know we're going to talk about him, but we also interviewed him. I interviewed him a few weeks ago, and it was there were very few. We've interviewed not everybody, Mike, but we've interviewed a lot of former Watford players. But he was sort of this special person that I never thought we would get to interview. And it was great when I got the opportunity to do it.
We've been really, really lucky with From the Rookery End to interview a lot of people involved in Watford. But there's some who seem like magical and untouchable, if that makes sense. Heidar's one. He just seems to be sort of, I suppose, befitting of his Icelandic roots. He sort of seems quite mythical, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And to be able to sort of to track him down and to be able to speak to him is really, it feels quite special. It feels really special, and especially because of the high regard in which I certainly hold Heidar Helgason, and I know pretty much every Watford supporter who was lucky enough to see him in the yellow will as well. It just, yeah, it's got that little sprinkling of magic about it, I think.
Yeah, and you will hear from the interview, he does have a speech impediment. And I think maybe that's why we haven't heard from him as much. He doesn't do as many interviews. I literally couldn't find an interview with him anywhere. It might be one somewhere. I haven't been able to find it. But it was great to sort of hear from him. And you'll hear the interview that I did. And we'll also speak to Sir Nigel Gibbs, of course, a man who not only was a Watford player when Heidar turned up, he also was part of the coaching staff throughout Heidar's time. So we want to get the inside track on what he was like. So we also speak to Sir Nigel Gibbs. But your memories of him, Jason, especially early on, let's say that, at least that first stint, we'll talk about his return, of course. But in that first stint, we were in the Premier League. We were struggling. Tommy Mooney was injured. And we were, coming off the back of two fantastic promotions. For you, you as a Watford fan at that point and watching him, what did he mean to you when he turned up at Watford?
Well, when he turned up, it was a record signing, wasn't it? And it seems funny these days to say it, but £1.5 million, that at the time was the most we'd ever spent on a player. So there was a lot of anticipation. I think we were, well, certainly I was realistic enough to know that he was unlikely to be sort of the golden shot that was going to save us from relegation. But there was still this sort of sense of anticipation. Watford have spent over £1 million on a player. And that first game when he came in, he certainly didn't disappoint. That goal he scored against Liverpool, that header. When you're struggling, when your team's down at the bottom, you're looking for little glimpses of magic across a season to get your enjoyment out of football. And that was certainly one of them. And it sort of set the tone for him as well. It was that, he's one of these players that would sort of get in the mix. He had a great leap on him. He'd get his head on anything. He'd be challenging goalkeepers. No sort of fear, no standing back, and sort of to hell with the consequences of the goalkeeper. And it's almost as if the goalkeeper or the defender marking him wasn't there. He didn't care. He'd go in, and more often than not, that would get us goals that maybe other strikers wouldn't get. So he set the tone with that in those early days.
Yeah, that first goal really does. It didn't just set the tone. It almost summed up his entire career. And we knew what we were getting at that stage, that first goal against...
I can imagine, though, Mike, at that point, because he's Hyder and he got a header. Everyone, Hyder got a header. I wonder if he'll score a few more of those.
That's definitely what you did, John, isn't it?
But I'll admit, actually, when he first joined up, I wasn't a heavy Watford fan at that point because I was at university and I just didn't get to as many games. And his first stint, of course, I saw, but I don't think I necessarily saw the full detail. So I didn't see that game, that first game. But everyone just fell in love with him instantly.
Yeah, it was full bore. He just gave everything to get to the ball, and he obviously didn't care which part of his body connected with the ball as long as something did, and it ended up in the net. And it's that full-blooded nature, that full-blooded performance, that absolute determination to win the ball resulted in that Premier League debut goal, which, as we'll hear later, is undoubtedly an absolute dream for him. I remember when we signed him, as Jay says, 1.5 million. It was a lot of money back then, certainly for Watford. And I think we knew that we weren't going to be spending lots of money. We recognised that Premier League season was going to be very, very difficult. It's even though we were on off the back of those two straight promotions and all the fun and games that brought with it, we did, I think, deep down know that it was going to be very difficult. But there was that little flicker when we did sign him for $1.5 million. And then when you saw him, it's like, because if you imagine sort of, right, you're thinking Icelandic striker, you're thinking, look, I'm not going to beat around the bush. You're thinking like Thor, aren't you? You're thinking 6'2", Boromir or whatever his hammer is called in his hand, you know, or in modern days, let's give it a little bit of football. You're thinking sort of Erling Haaland type stature, big old boy, come in. And he wasn't actually that big, was he? He's certainly, I think he's probably under 6 foot. And you think when you first see him, you think, oh right, he's stocky, he's really built, and he obviously means business. But he's not necessarily, if you close your eyes and imagine an Icelandic striker, he's probably not necessarily what you expected. But straight away into the fray, massive impact, and in terms of cementing his status with Watford supporters and getting their buy-in, getting their support, it happened from minute one. And that's, and I think the fact that it was despite us ultimately getting relegated, we still have super fond memories from Hyder Helgason in that initial season. I think that says it all about the relationship that he quickly forged and went on to have with us as Watford supporters.
Just to correct you, Mike, I know we don't get a lot of people complaining about things that we say and stuff on this podcast. It's Milner is Thor's hammer.
Boromir then that I said?
I reckon Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
You're
absolutely right to correct us because, we'll get a bursting mailbag, no doubt about that. Probably from Hyder himself, in fact.
Maybe. Jason, though, let's talk now the sort of onwards after that season. You know, it was the ability to jump like a salmon, the ability to run and work really hard that we fell in love with. But in terms of his place over those, five and a half seasons he was with us, he had, you know, so 1.5 with Graham, then he had with Viali, and the rest of it was pretty much with, apart from the very end, it was with Ray Lewington, or Ray Lou, as he's called. You know, how did you sort of see his place and in those teams which were not successful, necessarily, had some good cup runs, but we knew there was a limitation purely because of finances, apart from the hoopla season with Viali, where it all started, it all went badly wrong. Where did you sort of see him, and how did you sort of see his role in the club?
Yeah, it's funny how your mind plays and your memory plays tricks on you, isn't it? Because you think about those two cup runs, the FA Cup run and the League Cup run, and Hyder very much felt part of that. And weirdly, one of my, I suppose it is a Hyder memory, he scored the winning goal in that 1-0 win over West Brom in the FA Cup run, didn't he, at home. My works party was that day in London, so I couldn't go, but me and my other half and a few other work colleagues, all Watford fans, were watching Sky Sports Saturday in a pub in central London somewhere, and when Sky Sports went to the game for the goal, there was a small eruption there was a little bit of Hertfordshire in the pub in central London, and that, and that sort of stuck with me to this day. And I've obviously watched the goal back on sort of later in the weekend, and yeah, look, another sort of good finish from Haider. And so those cup runs I absolutely associate with Haider Helgason. The Viali season, I'd pretty much forgotten that he played him as a wing back.
Yeah.
I really don't associate Haider with that season. I think, because, like you say, the Hoopla season, it sort of stands out as an anomaly just in terms of the players we had and the money that was being spent that we didn't have. It was just something completely different to Watford over that whole sort of period. That almost Haider isn't a part of it for me. And obviously he wasn't as heavily involved as he would like to have been. And when he was, it wasn't in the position he would have liked to have been. But I've sort of almost disassociated the two. Haider is for me very much about what sort of followed after. And again, some seasons were a struggle. The cup runs perhaps gloss over. Certainly the League Cup run probably glosses over his last season in that first stint with us, when we had a good run to the League Cup, great games against Southampton and Portsmouth. But my, I think another abiding memory of Haider Helgason is Ray Lewington gone. We're getting towards the business end of the season. There were a lot of teams, if I remember rightly, sort of milling around, fighting against relegation, and we weren't completely safe with two games to go, and we had Stoke away, and I went to that game under Eddie Boothroyd, and again I think it was a 1-0, and Haider scored the winner. Big scenes of celebration in the away end, and I jumped up and down so much that I lost my keys out of my pocket and landed in the row behind. So I had to, yeah, sort of the person behind me, I didn't realise, the person behind sort of tapped me on the shoulder. Are these yours? And again, so silly things like that that sort of stuck with me for today. But that was Haider Helgason scoring a very important goal, because had we lost that game, we then went on to lose to West Ham in the final game of the season, I think it was. We wouldn't have had enough points to stay up. We could well have been relegated.
It was an interesting career, that first stint. He did suffer with injury, didn't he? And he didn't, like so many players we've seen over the years, you do wonder what would have happened had he been able to stay completely free of injury. And I guess we've already potentially alluded to the fact why he suffered with injury, just throwing himself around like some sort of, a lunatic at times, in the best possible sort of professional way. Perhaps that put a strain on him, and he did end up with more injuries than perhaps a less full-blooded player. And I think it felt like on occasions he lacked a little bit of confidence, and I suspect with the tumult that was going on around Watford during that spell, it's probably not massively surprising. Relegated in the Premier League, thrown in as a striker in the Premier League in a struggling side, it's very, very difficult. We've seen this season how Rajovic has come in from the Swedish league, which is obviously different to the Championship, and has taken time to adapt. Well, Haider had to come from Lillestrøm, didn't he, and reacted to the Premier League, and that's no mean feat. He obviously took to it well. Then there was changes in managers, then he had that change in position, the changes in Watford's situation over the course of that 4 or 5 years. So it was probably a really, really difficult time to be around the club. So to have sort of fluctuating confidence, not a massive surprise. But I think overall it felt like his Watford career, certainly that first stint, was an upward curve, I think. Looking back, you were always delighted to have him on the pitch. We always talk about how we want people to go out, step over that white line when they've got the Watford badge on, and to give their all. And you knew he was going to do that. You knew he was going to be battling for Watford. You knew he was going to be performing for us. And you knew he had the ability to make something happen. That enormous leap that would take defenders by surprise. You just knew what you were going to get. But I just felt that as time went on, we realised what a good footballer he was. He had a really good touch, scored with his left, scored with his right, and it just felt like we appreciated it more and more as that time went on, culminating in that last season of that spell where I think he scored most of his goals. And I think it was that last season, wasn't it, that was the League Cup run where we beat Portsmouth and Southampton, who I think were both in the Premier League at the time. And that goal he scored against Southampton, we absolutely took apart both of those sides under the lights at Vicarage Road. Hugely memorable games. But the ball came in, it was whipped in from the right, and Hyde was on the sort of left-hand angle of the penalty box, and he steered it with the instep of his right foot into the corner of the goal. It was the most sublime finish. And we've talked about Hyde's sort of physical attributes and the way he was made sure he was first to the ball, but that wasn't what he was about necessarily all the time. His touch was absolutely brilliant, and his finishing was exactly what you want from a striker. He could absolutely melt it into the back of the net, but he also had this wonderful touch as well. And that Southampton goal for me is one that, you know, if I close my eyes and think of Hyder, that's what I think. And I remember the pandemonium in the Rookery that night. It was, we were in the Championship and languishing a bit, and the fact that we were sticking it to these Premier League teams with the help of Hyder Helgeson was really good, and he felt like at the vanguard of that. It was it felt like we were doing it together with him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you're right that, you know, a player like him and the way the goals he scored at the time he scored, you know, the celebration losing your keys, Jason, was really sort of raucous, really sort of, you know, energetic, and in some ways sparse, I suppose. But he, of course, not only did he play crazily, he did celebrate a little bit crazily, Michael, because of course he tried to do a nice celebration, but fell over a billboard.
Yeah, and now I can't work out if the billboard gave away. It was in front of the Rookery, wasn't it? And it's a bit like Wesley Hurt in the game against Hull a couple of weeks ago, where he ran the full distance of the pitch to celebrate in front of the Watford fans, jumped onto the perimeter hoardings and saluted the away fans. Well, Hyder tried to do something similar after a goal, and I think he basically slipped off. But it's so typical with Hyder, he sort of styled it out, and it felt like, yep, that's typical Hyder Helgeson. What an absolute legend. And whereas some players, you might have laughed at them a little bit for it and found it a little bit embarrassing, for us and Hyder, it just felt like, yeah, that's the sort of thing that we would have probably done if we'd scored a goal celebrating for Watford. And it just felt, it just enhanced that connection, I think, with us as supporters. It's like, yes, there's our man doing his stuff out there, doing the sort of stuff that we do. And just that link with the supporters he forged was sort of, yeah, that summed it up. And I think if you say cult hero or terrace hero, he is never, ever far away from the lips of Watford supporters, largely due to memorable incidents like that.
There is one more little move that I used to like that he did. He had this uncanny knack when the ball was on the floor, and if he sort of racing towards the keeper, they seemed to be able to knock it past him and then change direction and run into the keeper and win a penalty. I think he did that on more than one occasion. I don't know if that's just me, but yeah, that I've got that stuck in my head for him as well.
Super canny footballer, really, really good feet and really, really good finishing. Like I say, people will remember the Liverpool goal. We've talked about it, but his touch and, like you say, Jakes, his body movement and the way he was able to maneuver the ball to where he needed it to be, or to, like you say, to win the penalty. Brilliant. What a player he was for us. What a player.
I mean, he also, for me, he sits in those players that I have a lot of respect for, Jason, with particularly because of the financial problems we had and the pay cuts they would have taken. And, you know, they, not to say this, we're not the same sort of place as football is now, but, you know, there could have been easily move away, get a move, take the money. But they sort of did, you know, he was one of those players that did sort of stick around and did what was needed, I suppose, to keep our club alive. And, you know, him, Neil Ardley and Neil Cox, they all really feel like players, as well as others, of course, they feel like players that did the club right, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And we sort of talk about this period in Watford history. It's sort of bookended by a couple of Premier League appearances, and you sort of associate that whole era sort of following the ITV digital collapse. We knew we were in sort of financial trouble. And once you're on that slippery slope, it is very hard to get out of. So that whole period you sort of associate with money problems. And for those players, especially with someone like Hyder Helgeson, who, as we've already said, is such a good player, it would have been easy for them to sort of say, well, no, this wasn't what I was sold when I came to the club. Came to the club as a Premier League player. Now I'm having to on cut wages, reduced wages, playing at a level lower than I came into, it would have been quite easy for them to sort of look elsewhere. Obviously, offers did come in the end, and we had to take the opportunity to sell him to Fulham when we did. I guess there's a chance that he could have gone earlier if he really wanted to, but he didn't.
His return, though, Mike, you talk about like his absolute what sums Hyder up. I think his return, his debut return against Leicester, it was 3-3. He came on, he scored two goals, then he got injured and he went off. And he was then injured for a good couple of games after that. He's back on loan from QPR. But that you could almost, again, that performance, seeing him play, knowing that, you know, if you look at the stats and stuff, he was not in a good place. And as he says later on, he wasn't enjoying life at QPR. And it was almost like he was like, right, I'm back. I want this. I want to do well. And I'm going to score goals. And he did score goals alongside that Danny Graham and Tommy Smith that season. But that game, come on, score, get injured, off you go. that energy.
His maybe perhaps like his career in microcosm, sort of come and make a really big impact, do what he's paid to do, which is score goals, and then unfortunately have that curtailed with injury. But I think that goes back to what Jace was saying about him being a good bloke and a good player for Watford, because I think he just got it. I think he understood what the place was about. I think he understood what we were about as fans. I think he understood what Watford were probably fighting for, or what level they were battling at that stage. And he just understood it and just wholeheartedly worked at it. And I think my take was that he enjoyed playing in a Watford shirt. And I think that shone through in that when he came back, he didn't look like he'd been gone. It didn't look like he'd been away, really. And I think he probably felt that as well. And yeah, to make that impact against Leicester was absolutely superb. And of course, we managed to make. I think we got him to the end of the season, didn't we? We extended the loan through to the end of the season because he was struggling a little bit at QPR, but then went on after that to do pretty well again. And it was the Hyder we know and love. And I think we were all felt a bit sad that he'd left and we weren't able to keep him on, but again understood that because we were where we were at and Hyder was where he was at. But yeah, that I think that Leicester game is one that will live in the memory as well. Just came on and did exactly what he's supposed to do, which is terrorise the opposition and score goals for the Golden Boys.
Yeah, and Jace, that season he sort of came back as a senior player in many ways because Danny Graham had joined that summer, done all right. He did score a goal in that return debut for Hyder. But him and Tommy Smith coming back just added that sort of seniority to that side, at that very young side that we had. And he just added a lovely, again, like you say, Mike sort of says there, Jace, he sort of says that idea of comfort and familiarity that he added to that. What do you think about his return and that season for you?
Interesting, because I missed that Leicester game. You know, I was a weekend away, but sort of trying to keep tabs on sort of on the game. So I think I was cycling around hills somewhere with sort of mates from university. So I missed that, and it felt like not a missed opportunity, but I missed out on a good, exciting game. And it was very clearly the return of Hyder with the two goals and then, of course, the injury. For the rest of the season, like you say, it was quite a young side. I think there were some old heads in there as well. If I remember rightly, we had some lone players in.
One,
Tom Cleverley, who's still at the club. One, Henry Lansbury as well, who may have gone on to sully his reputation somewhat by going elsewhere further on in his career. but those two guys put in a good shift for us and it's a sort of good season for us as well. And so we had it felt like we had a nice balance, but yeah, Hyder would have been very much an important part of that. And again, as you say, he was scoring goals again. Like Mike said, he'd struggled a bit. He obviously been at Bolton, didn't work out for him there, then gone to QPR on loan and I think it struggled at the start of that season after joining them permanently, if I remember rightly. So I suppose it was a little bit of a surprise that he came back. But like you say, it's almost like the bad times for him of the recent seasons have been forgotten and he started scoring goals again.
Went on for two more promotions. Another year, promotion with QPR the following year, a year in the Premier League, moved to Cardiff and another promotion. He was just, it revitalised him.
Exactly, as I was going to say. It's almost like we did them a favour because it just seemed to kickstart his career. And when the following season, when he sort of finished his loan with us and went back to QPR under Neil Warnock when they won the title, didn't they, that season with some good players. Hyder was very much a part of that. And then I think Cardiff, when, again, winning promotion, he was quite an old man by footballer standards at that age, but still, again, made a good contribution.
We're going to hear now from Sir Nigel Gibbs, a man who was around Watford for decades. And we want to find out a little bit from Nigel about what he was like to... Hyder was like around the training ground and what he was like in terms of everything, really, on and off the pitch. So this is what Mike and I spoke to Sir Nigel a couple of weeks ago to find out about Hyder. But I started asking Nigel about what the place was like at that point in 1999/2000.
You know, you still look back and remember things, and it was a very difficult sort of season in many ways because we didn't have the finances to compete, and we weren't able to bring many players of Premier League experience in, and that eventually cost us. I mean, we lost so many games by the odd goal that season, and we just weren't quite good enough, so we couldn't turn that draw into a win or that loss into a draw, and that was sort of how it went. I mean, I ended up playing, I think I made 16 appearances that season in the Premier League, but as you say, we had injuries to key players. So it was very, very difficult. And I think looking back now, it was very difficult for the club to sort of bring that better quality of player and then to keep that spirit of the players that got us those two promotions. And it's always a balancing act. And having been on the coaching side for many years now, I know how difficult that is. But as you say, it was a tough season. And, you know, losing a couple of players for long-term injuries, it wasn't easy.
So Hyder came in. He was a million and a half quid. Any Watford supporter can put their hand on the heart and say they'd heard of him. What was the reaction to the news of his signing when that came through to the dressing room?
I sort of follow football when I was a player, but you know, I hadn't heard of Hyder before, and obviously I knew he came from Lidstrom. 1.5 million was a big outlay for the football club. You know, I don't know if it was the record fee at the time.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, okay. But always you sort of trusted the boss's scouting of players and definitely needed a striker because in the Premier League you have to score goals, and when you get those few chances you have to take them. So brilliant we were bringing a player in, but obviously we didn't know anything about him, you know, and that was, you know, we're going to see how he coped with the Premier League because it was obviously, you know, his first time in England.
It's easy to forget how close that Watford side was. It was on a real crest of a wave going up through the divisions back to back. Player coming in, big price tag, record price tag, not replacing, but coming in to score the goals that Tommy was scoring. How did he sort of announce himself in the dressing room? What was he like as a bloke?
Firstly, he had a good start because he scored on his debut, didn't he, against Liverpool? Yeah, so that was a good way of settling in. But straight away, I mean, he probably only had a couple of days training before that Liverpool game and then he scored. But you soon saw what attributes he had. It fitted him really well, bubbly character. But training-wise was the key because you always judge people on the training field. And he was exactly the same as he was on the pitch. He gave 100% every day, you know, full on in training. You saw his attributes, full of energy. As a character, really, really good, humble guy. So he fitted in straight away to the group we had. There was a couple of other players probably didn't fit in as well. But certainly for Hyder, he obviously settled very quickly and became part of the group very, very quickly. And once you've scored that goal, that settles him down. We obviously struggled that season. I think he maybe got maybe 5, 6, 7 goals that season, and probably not as many as he would have liked. But he settled into the squad really well and fitted in really well.
How quickly did you all realise that he could defy gravity?
That was the other thing. Someone for his height, he had the best spring I've ever known. You know, he was incredible in the air. I mean, he wasn't 6 foot, but he could jump, you know, and he was very brave. okay, whenever you get the chance to put the ball in the box, you better, because you know you've got someone who's going to attack it. And that became quite evident early on. And, you know, over his Watford career and his career elsewhere, you saw him score many good goals with his head because, you know, he had such a great leap.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. You mentioned what he was like in training as well, Nigel, full-blooded, wholehearted. I think I read somewhere that there was a rumour doing the rounds that they had to make sure that him and Jay Demerit were on opposite sides or on the same side in trailing because they'd smash into each other otherwise. Is there any truth in that?
I cannot confirm or deny, but they definitely didn't play together much in small-sided games. Jay was the same. I mean, Jay was a 100% player, and I was like that myself. I couldn't be anything but 100%, so I really like those type of players even now, you know, because I can associate with those. And both Jay and Hyder, you know, they were terrific. And they could only play one way. You know, that was their strengths, and that's probably why they had the careers they did. You know, if you give everything on the training pitch and you're competitive, that's what you want as a coach, and that's what you want as other players. So, you know, he became very popular early on, Hyder, because of his commitment, you know, without a doubt.
You sort of straddled his career quite nicely. You played with him, as you mentioned, and also you were sort of on the coaching staff while he was there as well, weren't you? Because obviously, to us as supporters, we loved him because of everything you've described. So wholehearted, he would rough up defenders, he would chip in with goals. But it sort of does strike me as a slightly potentially more complicated character than just turn up and give it full throttle. Because the second year he struggled a bit, didn't he? He just didn't score as many goals, and I think I saw somewhere he said that Graham got stuck into him a little bit. Was that down to confidence with him? Was he a bit more fragile than perhaps fans might have thought?
I think we all are at times, but certainly as a striker, if you're not scoring goals, it does affect you, and it's very difficult for strikers to overcome that at times, because sometimes it's not your fault because you're not getting the service. You might not get the ball in the box at the right time, or that through ball. So it can affect you. But I think with Hyder, he cared so much, and that was the big thing. I think that's probably why his confidence maybe was affected at times. But I think it wasn't really until, you know, Ray Lue took over and I was on the coaching side then and actually really backed him and supported him and played to his strengths that you saw the best of him. And I think he'd probably say that himself, you know, but it's very difficult for strikers. It really is. And as you say, he probably on the outside looked, yeah, tough Icelandic boy, but, you know, underneath he cared. And that's probably why sometimes he, you know, his confidence maybe wavered.
Is that quite rare? I mean, I know footballers take pride. They have professional pride. You don't get to that level if you aren't fully committed, but caring is something that means a lot to us as supporters. Obviously, we invest a lot of time and money and effort, and you want to see the badge represented. Do you think he was someone that, you know, he stood out in that regard as just wanting to do the best for his club? Is that fair? And how rare is that?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think that there was never a game you would say, well, I'm not sure he was really at it today. He might not have had the best game in the world, but he gave 100%, and that's why probably he's so popular with the fans, because he was that player. And you can't play well every week, you know, but you can still work hard every week, and that's what he did. And I think that was his biggest strength. And then obviously he had his qualities, and, you know, I think probably the last season he maybe got 20 goals, and I wouldn't be surprised, you know, because that's the type of player he is, because he will improve as well, because he wanted to improve, but he cared. And I think that was, you know, one of his biggest assets, you know.
You know, seeing him under Graham, seeing him under Ray Lue, but also seeing him under Vialli. I mean, he was basically, if you look at the graphs and stuff, he just seemed to be a substitute that year. Mm-hmm. So he didn't quite get the love, but he did, when he played, he did score goals. Do you think that, you know, did you see anything different of him that season? We did get one message from a fan sort of saying at the end of season dinner that year, he looked really grumpy because he hadn't really been playing. Did you feel that, did you see a different side of him at all under Vialli? Or was everything different?
It was all different, because it was trying to play a different style of football, and like every professional I know, they want to play. So he wanted to play every week. He wanted to play as a striker. And if you're not playing, you're not going to be happy. So that probably was what people maybe saw at the end of the season, because it was a frustrating season for us all. And then come pre-season and it changes again, it gives you a new sort of, okay, we're off again now. I know Ray Lewington. I like Ray Lewington. I want to play for him. And that's no disrespect to Luca, because sometimes it just doesn't work out with a manager, does it? So, but it's never easy when you're not playing. And I think, you know, we saw that when Hyder became the regular under Ray Lewington, that you saw probably his best season, one of his best seasons, you know?
Do you think potentially, Nigel, striker is the ultimate confidence position? Because when you're playing as a defender, you're busting your balls to keep the ball out of the net, then yep. You need the striker to go and do the business at the other end, so you're relying on him. And when you're on the coaching side of things, obviously the name of the game is to score goals, and you need your striker to finish them at the end of the day. So do you think there is a did Hyder find that difficult? Do you think that, well, is that true, that level of expectation? And do you think Hyder found that tough to get to grips with?
I think, you know, every striker is judged on his goals. But I think, you know, as a coach now and from the other side of it, you want more than, you know you're going to have more than scoring goals. Scoring goals is the icing on the cake and what you judge on. But his work rate, so you're defending from the front. You know, you're creating for other people, you're defending both box, you know, you're defending the box and then trying to score on the other one. So there's more to the game, but because you're judged on goals, then, you know, it can be quite difficult. But again, as I spoke, you know, alluded to it earlier on, that you rely on the service as well. You know, you need the service, you need the ball in the box at the right, you know, so he can make his runs and, you know, get across his defender or run in behind, whatever it is. So you are relying on other people to create and score, you know, create chances for you. And then it's up to you to score the goals. So, you know, it'd be really interesting, and I haven't done it, but for High there, you know, what is his, you know, shots to goal ratio? Because he might not have had many chances and scored quite a lot of goals from the chances he got, you know, or he might have had a lot of chances and didn't, you know, you just don't know. But, you know, certainly as a striker, you need other parts of your game to do well. And I think if he didn't score, you knew that he would cause problems to the opposition. He would chase things down. His work rate was phenomenal. You know, he'd do other things for the team. And as I say, those players are invaluable, let me tell you.
You were still on the staff in his last season, weren't you? So was there a thing about when, you know, that last season with Ray and then AD came in right at the end? Was there a thing about actually it was time for him to move on? Because he'd come to Watford as this, you know, he never had any experience in England. He'd spent 5 years, whatever it was, with Watford. Do you feel that actually there was a lot of, Hyder's going to be going this summer? Or did it seem right time for it?
I'm not sure, John, to be honest, because I obviously left in that summer as well. And obviously, AD had come in and, you know, maybe he decided that was this decision. You know, I wasn't privy to that. So I don't know is the answer. You know, when you've scored 20 goals, people are going to be showing an interest in you as well, aren't they? So you just don't know, you know, whether it was the club's decision or whether it's actually the bid was too high. I don't know. But as soon as you start scoring 20 goals a season, you're going to be wanted, or, you know, it's going to be, you know, a contract that's going to be better than the one you're on. So there could have been a couple of sort of things that were, you know, reasons for him moving on.
That's why we're glad you only scored 5 or 6, Nigel. We got to hang on to you, which is.
Could I just say it was 7? Well, 7.
I teed you up for that. That was across for your own little tap in there.
Thank you very much.
Because after Watford, he was a Premier League player. He played at Fulham. He played at Bolton. He played at QPR. You know, it wasn't a surprise. But did you think it was a surprise for football? I suppose that he did keep a good career going in the Premier League after what was only 6 months with Watford, really, in the Premier League before he played for us, you know, pretty much in the Championship or the Tier 2.
Yeah, I think, you know, because of the things I spoke about, his other attributes to his game as well as his goals, maybe, you know, that was why people were and signed him and obviously kept on playing in the Premier League, because they're hard to come by, you know. So, you know, sometimes you get, well, he can score goals, but he doesn't really contribute much to the team if he's not scoring goals, whereas Hyder contributed a lot to the team and could score goals. You know, he had spells where he, you know, would go on runs and score goals. So that I'm not surprised that to managers and coaches liked him and bought him and he did stay in the Premier League, because, that, you know, as I spoke, that those attributes are few and far between, you know.
Have you got a, just to finish off, unless John's got anything else, but just to finish off, have you got a favourite on-field moment with Haider? Mine was when he celebrated. He jumped on the advertising hoarding, and the advertising hoarding collapsed underneath him. I thought that summed up the chaos that Haider brought to things pretty well. Have you got a favourite on-field moment with Haider, and a favourite off-field moment that we might not have heard of or known?
I suppose his celebrations were... he was so pleased to score, wasn't he? Whenever it was, I was thinking that. I mean, I can remember him do a high knee sort of run after scoring a goal, and you know, different ones, and like going into the stand. So, I mean, he just loved scoring goals, and I think there's not particular one thing. The other thing is that Haider and I were keen golfers, so he never played golf, but he became obsessed with golf when he came over to England. And he used to play regularly, and obviously we kept in touch when I'd finished playing and he'd moved on to other clubs and I'd been elsewhere. And myself, him and Alex Chamberlain went actually up to St Andrews to play golf for a weekend together. And so he absolutely loved his golf, and he would wear his plus fours. He would have the, if you could imagine an old golfer in Scotland, that is Haider. So he would take it literally. So he would have the plus fours, the cap, the outrageous colours. And so that was always a good memory. I mean, he loved his golf and he got obsessed with it. And I spent many a good time on the golf course with him.
Was he hectic and passionate about his golf, or did you see a different side of him when he played golf?
No, he was obsessed. He was obsessed with golf, and he would practice and he would get annoyed if he wasn't. So he wanted to be the best golfer he could be, and that sort of was the same as him as a footballer, wasn't it? He gave everything on the pitch, and on that golf course he would have lessons, he would do everything. Bear in mind, he never played golf before he came to England, so he was obsessed with it. And I know actually when he was at Fulham, he became a member of Wentworth, and I went round and played golf with him round there. He was obsessed with it, so you know, good memories of time. And obviously Alec was a keen golfer as well, so we enjoyed a great weekend up at St Andrews playing golf.
Good there, Mike, to hear, like, you know, almost like Sir Nigel backing things up about all our feelings about Haider.
Firstly, can I say, this is obviously a podcast dedicated to Haider, and I think he is a Watford legend for me, Haider Helgeson. He definitely fits that bracket. But what an incredible man Nigel Gibbs is. What an absolute joy to speak about.
Apart from you insulting him about the number of goals he's scored, Michael.
Yeah, well, that was basically a backhanded sort of ego massage for him to tell me how many he did actually score. But yeah, the way that Nigel Gibbs speaks so warmly about Watford is so rewarding. There's that famous phrase, never meet your heroes. Well, meeting Nigel Gibbs or talking to Nigel Gibbs is nothing but an absolute pleasure. So thank you to Sir Nigel for giving up his time. And I think, yeah, he speaks calmly and eloquently about Haider and yeah, it reaffirms everything that we thought about the man. What did change slightly was that when I picture Haider Helgeson, I see either that Southampton goal, him sort of bullying the Liverpool defence, or as we mentioned earlier, falling off the hoarding in front of the rookery end. Now, I have to add to that in my sort of mental image bank of Haider Helgeson is him in plus fours,
in
styling full regalia.
It was fantastic, you know, to hear Sir Nigel, and it was hard when I actually spoke to Haider, because he's back in Iceland. It was a Sunday night, and we were having technical problems, all the rest of it. But we got connected, and it was a little bit different and distant, shall I say. But you'll hear it now, where I got to sit down and have a chat to Haider. He definitely comes across, as you'll sort of hear, as someone who doesn't have the memory, doesn't remember the details. I can sort of I can feel that a little bit myself, not like Jason, who remembers all the stats and stuff. But it's this is what Haider had to say about his time at Watford. Of course, we go through all the eras and the managers that he sort of played under. But this is our interview with Mr. Haider Helgeson. Or Nigel Gibbs, or Sir Nigel Gibbs, as we call him. When we spoke to him on Friday, he said you got quite obsessed with one thing in particular when you came to England, and that was golf. He said you love playing golf. Is that right?
Yes, it is. I played quite a bit once I was there. Before I arrived, I sort of hiddled a little bit with it. Hit it in well with a football, I suppose. And obviously, Alec and Gibbo and Coxie and them played a little bit. I still play.
I can say, do you still play with it a lot?
You know, obviously the season here, the golfing season here is 4 months.
Can I start by asking again, like, so when you came over to England, how did that come about? Was it something that you had been pushing for, or was it a bit of a surprise for you?
Not pushing, but I was in Norway at the time playing for Lillestrøm. In my second season there, I did fairly well. Knew of interest from teams, not in England, but in France and elsewhere. So I knew I was going to go somewhere. But as soon as, you know, Watford came in, that was really never any other option. Because in Iceland, English football is massive. It was always a dream rather than something else to play in England. So when the opportunity came, you know, there wasn't really any other option. Well, you know, didn't really want to go anywhere else.
And with that, was it the fact that, was Watford at all a big draw? Did Graham play a role in maybe making it an easy choice for you?
I would love to say that it make a difference, but it was, if I'm being honest, it was the only team in England that came in, obviously knew about Watford and, you know, Elton John and Graham Taylor, so knew about them. But it wasn't really that I wanted to particularly come to Watford, you know, but I'm really happy I did.
But and you joined, it was at 1.5 million when you joined, which at that point was the highest Watford ever paid for a player. Did that sort of price tag or that sort of status weigh on your mind? Or was it a thing that was talked about or you thought about?
Not really, no. I never really thought about it, to be honest. And I suppose the way I started this season and played in the, you know, the second part of the Premier League season that I came, you know, wasn't really, I, you know, did fairly well. Wasn't really something that was on my mind. I can't remember it ever been mentioned.
And when you turned up, say, halfway through the season, you score one against Liverpool on your first game, you score the following week. But Watford was sort of struggling, I suppose, in the Premier League. How did that feel to be around the club and coming into the club at that point?
It was just fantastic. You know, I never really noticed that, you know, obviously on the pitch and, you know, looking at the table and stuff, you noticed that, you know, we were rock bottom and stuff. But, you know, it was just so much adrenaline and, you know, stuff going on with me personally that I didn't really pay any attention to it. I was just, you know, literally just on cloud nine. Having made it over to England.
In terms of fans, there's two things we adored about you as a footballer. Firstly, your work rate, how hard you worked, and the other one, and it's still. I remember when you returned, how much it sort of. I remember just how amazing your ability to jump really high, and to head a ball was just extraordinary compared to, you know, someone of your stature. Were those natural skills that you had, or did you work on them?
They were never really intentionally worked on. I played basketball until I was about 15, 16. And I'm pretty sure that helped. But it's just something that I've always, you know, always had. Nothing I particularly worked on or, you know, with regards to the running and the work rate. It's just something, you know, that I've always had. Even when I was younger, I was always running around everywhere. There was no real conscious effort into practicing the timing of the jumps or anything else. It's just something that I had. And I think that, you know, the basketball played a part in that.
And did you find you changed, you know, did you change much as a footballer when you came to England? Do you have to change anything?
Yes and no. I had to improve on a few things. Playing as a target striker or something, there was a few things I had to learn and develop. You know, the way I played for the majority of my career was pretty much how I've always been. Later years, I was more of a, you know, target striker, less running the channels and stuff. But I think that was, you know, just old age.
We both, you and I, are a similar age. I'm about only two years younger than you. So I understand the feeling a bit older. Stuff happens. Talked about it already, but in terms of that debut, scoring at home against Liverpool, did that seem like a dream come true, the fact that you had scored against, you know, a worldwide club on your debut?
Oh, absolutely. I've been a Liverpool supporter all my life.
All right.
It was ironic that we played them in the first game, and you know, to be able to score on your debut and play reasonably well. Unlucky we didn't win, but for me personally, it was just a dream debut, apart from the loss.
And of course, score the following week as well, which just settle things down, I suppose.
Bradford away.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. I was looking up on the archive, just sort of trying to figure it out and go, yes, make sure I could. Yeah, my memory is going and all the rest of it, so just make sure I could remember things correctly. In terms of that time, that's the end of that season, and then the following season with Graham. What was he like as a manager? You know, we see him as, you know, the greatest manager Watford ever had over the two spells he had. For you, what was it like working with Graham?
Obviously, very good. I don't think I appreciated him enough at the time. Young second season for me didn't really go particularly well. I came back a little bit overweight. I got injured in pre-season and I never really got going. And, you know, he had a few well-chosen words to me from time to time during that season that I didn't really take too well at the time. But as I got older and matured, I realised he was correct in everything. And I really enjoyed my time while he was the manager, even though I just caught the latter years of his career.
Yeah, apart from that, him being a bit, straightforward and straight to the line in terms of your fitness and stuff. Was there any? What was your favorite? Do you have a favorite moment you had with him?
My favorite moment was it was after a game. I can't remember who it was. It was Elton John came into the dressing room and presented him with a mask of spitting image.
Oh yes, yeah.
He bought his mask at an auction somewhere. And presented him with it. That was, that's the one I remember. So long ago, I get all the years mixed up. 20-odd years.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean. But the following year, when Graham left, the Viola year, that season, I'm sure, is in your memory for very different reasons. Because he played you at fullback, at wingback almost at one point, didn't he?
He did, yes, absolutely. I remember that well.
So how was that? You know, for us as fans, it was a massive change. It must have been huge for you as players, as well as all the players that came in. In terms of, you know, that season, how was that from your point of view?
Well, you know, I've found him and Ray Wilkins really pleasant, fantastic lads. You know, it's maybe strange, you know, to hear or say that, you know, I quite enjoyed my time, you know, that year, even though I didn't play as much as I wanted or in the positions, you know. But football is it's about personal opinions, and you know, he obviously didn't fancy me up front, you know, but it was a good experience.
Okay, that's lovely to know.
You know, it wasn't a successful one, but you know, I quite enjoyed that time.
Oh, that's amazing to know. I didn't think you'd say that about that season, because you say be playing out of position and you basically sub, but coming on fairly regularly as a sub when you were.
I mean, if you would have spoken to me then, possibly you might have had different opinions, different view on things. But looking back now, and I've, you know, never had any you know, ill feeling or anything towards them or that season, really.
And then when Ray Lou came in, you know, we chatted to Nigel about it, how, you know, you all of a sudden you almost found your feet again, and were playing, you know, so much better. How was he as a manager? How did he help you?
He basically believed in me that, you know, I tended to play my best when I knew that the manager liked me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think I'm any different to anyone else, you know. But this season before, I had played quite a few reserve matches under Ray, and our relationship was pretty good. Fantastic man. I really, really, really like Ray.
And of course, it was during a financial problematic time at Watford. How was that in terms of the, you know, changing room and pay cuts, and, you know, Neil Cox having to, you know, meet with you players and sort things out? And yeah, it was a tough time. But what was it? What were your memories of the change room at that point when all the tough decisions had to be made?
Nothing but good. I think it, you know, looking back on it, I think it only affected us in a positive way, really. Some of my fondest memories are the cup runs during those years. You know, the Liverpool matches, the Southampton, you know, Portsmouth at home, semi-final runs and all that. So I think it only rallied us, really.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed that way. It completely, you know, from the stands, it really did seem that way. We you know, when you hear and see press about financial problems, you think the worst. And there were lots of really bad clubs at that point who were, you know, nosediving down the leagues when things went wrong. And it was amazing we sort of stayed where we did. And I think a big part of it was, you know, the sacrifices and the changes that you guys made as players. But that FA Cup, I watched some clips ahead of speaking to you. And there was a moment, there was a header you did I think it was the first couple of minutes against Southampton. And the ball just went, you headed it down. The keeper literally just got it around the post. Those big games, which ones of those stand out for you? And do you remember?
I think it was Portsmouth probably at home in that cup run. I think, well, my memory of the two semi-finals were that we were... How should I say this? Is that it was maybe a step too far? Is my feeling was that, you know, we've reached where we're going, because I didn't think, remembering those two games, that, you know, we were ever going to win them.
Not even a little chance of maybe getting a result that you needed?
Obviously, beforehand, you know, but how the games played out, I just think that was maybe the end station. I sort of had the feeling, looking back on it, is that, you know, if we would have scored, they just would have scored again. That's my honest assessment of, you know, obviously before the games, we were hoping to win. But looking at the games after the game, I think we had reached sort of our limit. Or, what should I say?
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Yeah, reach your ceiling.
Yeah.
You played with us for many, many seasons. In terms of that first spell that you had with us, who were the players that you think you were closest with, or you were the best players for you, either because they helped you score goals, or you helped them score goals, or they were your closest sort of friends in the change room? Which players do you have fond memories of?
Alec, Gippo, Coxie, Neil Ardley, Tommy Smith. I was in contact with Espen Bartson, the keeper. Remember him?
Yeah.
I was in contact with him for a while. Richard Johnson, isn't he at the academy?
Yeah, he's head of the academy. Yeah, he's running that now.
So many to mention. Micah Hyde, remember him.
But in terms of your sort of your first exit from Watford, you know, Ray Lew had left, AD had come in. Did you have conversation with AD about playing that season, or, you know, were you always going to be leaving to, you know, for financial reasons, so the club could get some money from your selling? How did your sort of your exit play out?
AD obviously came at the end of the previous season, and I played, I can't remember how many games he was charged. Obviously, if there hasn't been any interest, then I would have stayed on. But I think because of the financial problems, someone had to go. There was some interest in me from Wigan and some others, and I was looking to get into the Premier League if and when the opportunity would arise. I'd pretty much agreed everything with Wigan when Fulham came in. I was up in Wigan pretty much ready to sign when they rang. And then I had to just say no to them and travel down, you know, because I wanted more of Fulham than, you know, the Wigan move. Watford needed the money, and because there was an interest from the Premier League, I was also interested, you know, to take them up on that interest.
What was life like at Fulham, and then at Fulham, and then you went to Bolton, and then to Queen's Park Rangers? How did you find that life compared to life at Watford?
I liked my time at Fulham. It was similar to Watford, the size of it and stuff, stadiums and, you know, everything else. And I really, really liked it at Fulham. I was 18 months at Bolton, but that didn't work out. I was injured for quite a while, and then Maxson came in as manager, didn't fancy me, so I went on loan to QPR. And the loan went well, and then I signed permanent, and there were so many problems behind the scenes and stuff, and I was just playing really badly. When the chance to come back to Watford came up,
Well, yeah, how did that come about?
I think I might have rung, actually, Richard Collins, physio, if I remember correctly.
But and how easy was that decision, though, to come back at that point? Because, you know, we weren't in the best place at that point. I think close, again, to financial problems and possibly going out of business. What was the sort of atmosphere in the, you know, the changing room under Malky? Because, I mean, and again, you scored in your debut, too, in that 3-3 draw with Leicester, which was just like...
Yeah, I went off injured.
Yeah, you did. How was that? Like your return, and you know, you're almost playing a completely different role. You were much older, and in terms of, you know, Danny Graham was there. He sort of started fairly well for us that season. His following year, he had a great season, but then that year with you, you know, with you, did you see yourself in a different role at Watford, being a slightly older, experienced pro?
Well, you know, it, you know, didn't disappoint. Absolutely enjoyed my time there again. There was just so much crap going on at QPR behind the scenes, and manager after manager after manager. I just didn't like it, and I wanted to come to Watford. I went to Watford for that 9 months or whatever it was, and absolutely loved it again.
How was that coming back? Yeah, playing with Tommy, but also how was it, you know, playing with what was a very young team of players who, and Tom Cleverley, of course, who were very young, Tom Cleverley at that point. What was it like to play with them?
Really good. It was a really good team. And then obviously me and Tommy played at QPR a couple of years after that. So, you know, like I said before, I really enjoyed that loan spell. And it sort of kicked me on really for the, you know, last few years of my career, because I wasn't enjoying football at QPR until Warnock turned up. Those 9 months at Watford, yeah, really kicked me on again.
Yeah, because you had a great season the following year, you know, winning the championship, another year in the Premier League, and then another winning season at Cardiff. So it did feel like it sort of revitalised you a little bit to make the last few years in England a massive success.
Yeah, it did, absolutely.
And when you look back now, as both your sort of spells at Watford, and can I ask, like, we, as I said, as Watford fans, we absolutely adored you, and you know, you're up there with the biggest names of in history. When you were here and when you were playing, did you know that we, you know, we loved how you played football and we loved you wearing a yellow shirt? Did that come across to you?
It did. I knew I was reasonably well liked. And yes, I did always feel that I was appreciated and loved. I have to say, yeah, I did notice that, yeah.
You know, now you're not an old man, but you're older man. How do you look back and what do you think you got the most? What were the most important things that you got from your time as a Hornet?
You know, just the experience and pleasure. You know, like I said before, looking back, I absolutely loved my time all those years at Watford and wouldn't have missed them for the world.
And if you could if you could send a message to Watford fans now, what would you like to say to them?
Just thanks ever so much for all the support and keep reporting like you've always done. Fantastic.
Do you get to watch Watford much?
I have been about 4 times in the last few years. I didn't go much at all, you know, the first few years after I retired. But then in the sort of last 4 or 5 years, I've been, I think, 4 or 5 times.
A podcast made by Watford fans for Watford fans from the Rookery End.
Straight off the back of something there, John, I'm going to pick you up on something you said before we played in Hyder talking there. Doesn't remember the detail. Well, I remember quick as a flash, you mentioned the Liverpool goal and you said, oh yeah, he scored in the next one. Yeah. And before you even finished saying that, he said, yeah, away at Bradford. So I think you might have done Mr. Helgeson a little bit of a disservice there. So he's, he remembers the important stuff evidently.
It's just lovely to hear from him, isn't it? It's like you said, John, sort of listening to that. He's not someone that we thought we'd ever get to speak to. Like you say, he's back in Iceland. And I think the thing that stood out for me is that he does seem to get how much we loved him and appreciated him as fans. And that's probably why we were sort of talking before the interview about him hanging around when possibly he could have gone if sort of other offers had came in sort of during those difficult times. That's probably a big part of it, isn't it? That's probably why he was happy to do so. I just thought that came across really well sort of throughout that interview, how much he appreciated Watford. And sometimes you wonder when players move around, when they're sort of playing for different clubs, and you think of what he achieved. We spoke before about winning promotion with QPR, winning promotion with Cardiff. Yeah, as Mike says, there are details that he's picked up in there. He clearly loved his time at Watford. He loves the fans, and it's great to hear that. It's quite reaffirming as a Watford fan to hear someone that we love and appreciate seems to sort of share that mutually about us as fans.
What I thought was extraordinarily lovely was when he talked about joining Watford. The way he described coming over to play in England in the Premier League, he described it as a dream. And you could tell by the way he said it, as a literal dream, as something that almost like the way we'd look at it. Sort of, oh, one day I'd love to play in the Premier League. He almost sort of suggested it as this unattainable thing, as something obviously he was working towards, but did he really believe it was ever going to happen? Because it was such a pinnacle, seen as such a pinnacle. And to hear him sort of describe ultimately him achieving that goal was so, so great. It's just like the essence of, we know what we want as sports supporters. We want to see our team play well and win stuff. But just to hear what it's actually like for an elite performer to achieve their goal, there was something really, really magical about that. And the fact that it was Haider, a man who we've grown to love and respect and enjoyed so much watching, achieving his dream through Watford, sort of with us as part of the journey, just really cemented the relationship, if you like, and made it feel so special. I was so pleased for him, so proud for him, how proud he must have felt to have achieved that goal of getting the move to England. And then in your first game, to score against the team you supported with the world watching on. It's just beautiful. And the fact that we're a part of that, and the fact that Watford was able to give him that, and in turn he gave Watford back so much, was I found it quite moving, and I just loved it. It was so great to hear from him, and he sort of speaks with such enthusiasm. I think he was quite honest with you, I felt, John. And But that's because he's enthusiastic and he felt able to talk about football and his feelings and how it went, and how he said himself he came back a little bit overweight and didn't really agree with Graham Taylor when he was busting his balls a little bit, but then grew to understand it. And I think that chat just allowed us to sort of, it said a lot. It gave us a real insight into his career and how he changed, and the challenges of changing a division, which were mentioned earlier, and how he dealt with that. It was absolutely fascinating, I thought, with loads of lovely little detail in there. I loved I loved his memory about Elton John bringing in Graham Taylor's spitting image mask. I thought he was just going to say, oh, it was great to see Elton John. He came in and told us a story about once when he was in a Rolls Royce with the Rolling Stones or something. But what an amazing thing. Then again, a little insight into the stuff that we don't see about the stuff Elton thinks, oh, I'll get that for Graham and bring that in, and the lads will think that's funny. And it all just helps to build this. We think Watford's magical, right? And we hear stuff like this and we go, Watford absolutely bloody well is magical. We've had some of the most incredible characters associated with our club over the years. And just to hear it firsthand from someone like Haider is, yeah, I've said it and I'll say it again, magic.
Where does he sit, though, for you, Jason, in the history of Watford? I know it's really hard to sort of say this because Luther and Troy are sort of in a different place, let's say. But if I said to you, top five or top ten, do you think, of strikers that played for Watford? I know you're definitely going to be above Nathan Ellington, but where do you think? Is he in your top five? Is he in your top ten strikers of all time?
Blimey, that's a good question. He probably is. If I sort of look back over the years and think of who else would be in there, I'm sure we'd be in certainly top ten, possibly, yeah, probably. I just think who else would be there? Obviously, like Luther and Ross Jenkins would both be in there. I suppose we have to say Troy. Troy goes in there, doesn't he? And then he's probably you mentioned Danny Graham earlier. Mm-hmm. I was a big Danny Graham fan. We love him. And then there's sort of other almost sort of cameo type roles of players that you appreciated at the time. Someone like Jerry Armstrong was there when I first started going. Well, in fact, no, just after I started going to see Watford, he appeared on the scene. Always liked him for sort of his brief Watford appearance. And yeah, then you sort of...
Can I simplify
it? I think he probably would.
Bit.
Yeah, please, because it's a difficult question.
So
probably because I'm older than you.
I think if you watched Watford during the time that Heider Helgeson played for the Hornets and you said, who's your favourite Watford player?
Yeah.
Heider Helgeson would without doubt be in every single conversation. That was the impact he had on us as Watford supporters. He was, and we've discussed, you know, the career was up and down, there was injury, yada, yada, yada. But you talk about your fan, it's like an emotional reaction, isn't it? It's about a feeling of connection, it's about feeling something. And Heider always made you feel something, and usually it was pride in the badge. You bounced off his obvious dedication to playing for the football club. So if you watched Heider play and someone asked you, who's your favourite Watford player? I guarantee you virtually every single Watford fan would mention Heider Helgeson. He didn't fail. He couldn't have failed to have just touched the lives of you as a Watford supporter if you're around in that time. He was just such a great addition to the club. He was fun to watch. He was exciting to watch. He was exhilarating to watch. We've discussed the way he played, his good touch, his finishing, the goals that he came up with. Just an absolute joy to behold. And if you could bottle what Heider had, you could make some very, very good footballers.
Thank you very much for listening to podcasts. We love doing something a bit different than just talking about the games all the time. We do love watching the games, of course. But doing something special like this and speaking to someone special like Heider is one of the wonderful things we get to do on this podcast. And we really hope you enjoyed it. We hope you have a very Merry Christmas. Thank you very much, Michael.
More than welcome. Thank you. Well done, John, for speaking to Heider. He did an absolutely magnificent job.
Thank you. And thank you, Jason.
Yes, here. Well done, John. Thank you.
And thanks to Nigel and Heider, of course.
Yes, of course. Sir Nigel. I don't know what you call a lord or a sir in Iceland, but I'm sure he's got one. Thank you very much to Heider. We'll be back, of course, with some more chat about Watford and some games that are going on across the festive period. But thank you very much, and come on, you horns!